I know Jerry White's really welcomed you, but I also wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity just to sort of welcome you again to HSRAU. I know Nancy and Rod have talked a lot about how we can work more closely with South Australia, and I think what Jerry said down at lunch today is something that we're really keen to explore, you know, how we can work more closely with South Australia TAFE. And broader that sector as well. So we'll be very keen to explore that. But today I won't detract from the fact that we've got someone here who most of you will know really well. And that's Stephen. So that is Stephen there. It does look like he looks in the picture. And he is controversial. So I hope today you will in fact challenge Stephen on some of the things he says. But I know you will be challenged as well. So I think Stephen's really looking forward to, and Roz as well, looking forward to a very interactive session where you can be challenging Stephen, and I know he'll be doing the same thing. So again, welcome. For those of you who don't know about us and what we do, I've left a brochure there. My role at the moment, in fact, I didn't even introduce myself. I'm Gary Putnam, for those of you who don't know. And my role is Business Development Manager. So it's really about how we grow and sustain the company. And part of my role is for marketing and promotion. So it wouldn't be right if I didn't actually get that opportunity to say, here's the brochure, please read it. And the services which we manage on behalf of the education funding sector are in there. Okay, done my promotion. I'm going to introduce you to Roz now. Roz didn't want me to say anything, but we know her.
Stephen, I have to say the first time I met Stephen was at the in Brisbane at the 2001 networking conference, and Stephen, I think what you gave the daily report through that conference, and then we heard that Stephen was presenting a workshop, and I was one of the thousands that actually got into that workshop. They were running, you know, chairs at the back because the word got around at the time was actually and I thought, how come I'm just enjoying this session so much? And then I realised that Stephen's a philosopher, and I'm married to a philosopher, so I had a very easy to listen to Stephen, because I've been listening to this sort of philosophical reflection for years, like 34. And so not only that, Stephen had presented that workshop by going around Brisbane and showing us shots of Brisbane that he'd seen that day. And wow, Brisbane's what was my hometown, and here was someone from Canada who knew more about Brisbane than me, so I was absolutely engaged. And I've taken a lot of the thinking from that workshop, Stephen, and it has actually influenced me. I feel I don't have to introduce Stephen, because how many in this room get Stephen daily news? How many in this room get Stephen weekly news?
Anyway,
so how many don't get anything at all? Well, you are. You will after today. The idea of this workshop was that Education AU had heard that Stephen was in Australia and invited Stephen down to run some workshops for Education AU. And Gary rang and said, "Hey, he's free in the afternoon. How would you like to use it? Would you like to?" And we said, "Yes." Such hard-working people for the whole of the vet sector, we thought we'd give TAFE a say a little bit of a treat. So this is why you've got TAFE a say written on your name tag and not the Australian Sector and Framework, because you're here as TAFE employees. And what we did was we targeted, the oldies and the innovators here in TAFE a say, and we said bring along someone in your organisation or institute, one or two people, who you think are enthused by e-learning, want to know more, open up their minds, and bring a new energy. Partly because the rest of us are getting really old and tired and we want new people, but also I think it is time to yeah, to acknowledge that there's a lot of great thinking and happening out there in Capricorn. But Stephen, this is a little bit of a reward for us. Stephen said to Nancy and myself 10 minutes ago that he wants to keep this fairly informal, and I said, yep, that would suit us, and we'll certainly use this as a dialogue. We focused it as a bit of a PD opportunity for all of us here in Capricorn around future thinking in meetings. So with that, welcome to Stephen.
Well, hello everyone. I hope you enjoyed my informal content. Wasn't sure what Gary would say when he turned around and realized I'd been playing these while he was talking, but I couldn't resist because I haven't seen any of these pictures like big yet. So, although there's a bit of a metaphor to that anyways, there's always a metaphor. I am a philosopher after all, so there is a metaphor. And the metaphor is, if your business is, the publication and production of image libraries, this is some philosopher with a camera traveling around Australia can do, and what anyone can do. People are producing their own content now, and you get access to this sort of stuff, and people are getting access to it, and that changes things. This session is also in kind of an odd way, an homage to Marie Jasinski's Edu-Chaos, because we're going to do Edu-Chaos. There isn't a plan. There never was a plan. Somebody told me this morning that the topic of the workshop was collaboration systems. Somebody may have sent that to me in email, but all of my email was deleted by our enterprise software in our office. So I'm for the second part of my Australia trip, I'm really working without a net now. I have no notes. I have a piece of paper which tells me when my flights are. and that's it. I had to call ahead to find out here where I was staying. I didn't know. I was afraid I was going to land in Adelaide and not know where to go. And I'm sure many people would have told me. But so anyhow, and I had to warn Roz before the talk too that because, in e-learning, we're working with a lot of these fairly structured systems and learning management systems and the content management systems and the collaboration engines and so on and so forth. And I kind of live in a different world. I've given up on learning management systems. I've given up even, although I still use them because people want me to do talks at a distance, and so I sort of have to go with the flow and use the technology that they use. But, these collaboration systems with shared screens and things like that, I don't use those except for that sort of thing when somebody else has a software and they want me to use it. And I immediately uninstall it because it does weird things to my computer. I live in a much more informal world than that. As those of you who have read my newsletter know, my newsletter and my website are my content management system. They are my collaboration system. The stuff that I'm playing with on my site is the way that I think collaboration in the long run will work the best. Now, this is on the fly here, and I'm not going to talk for very long, but this thought just occurred to me, so I'll share it. That's how the newsletter gets done anyways, because I'm just thinking about, well, I use things like RSS and blogs and wikis and even some chat from time to time and so on and so forth. And people were commenting to me, just at the various stops that I've made, and in an email or something like that, but instructors don't use these things. There's not too many instructors blogging, hardly any have a wiki and RSS, they sort of, it's an Indian political party. And I was thinking, well, yeah, and that's because these kinds of technologies are kind of wild, they are kind of chaotic, they are kind of uncontrolled. and it's a different mindset to use them. And you sort of have to be thinking of it differently, and differently about the nature of content, differently about the nature of online collaboration, because things aren't neatly structured, and there are multiple threads of thought running through things. And then the thought that occurred to me as I was standing here is, and that's probably what the existing systems are doing, is doing all of this thinking for the instructors and the other people, so that they don't need to get into this kind of free and dynamic sort of collaboration environment that these systems actually do all that work for them. But the thing is, with that sort of guidance comes control, and with that control comes the lack of capacity to genuinely communicate. So I'm about, and so the issue, and you know this, I'm not going to tell you something new here, the issue with respect to online collaboration, sharing knowledge networks, things like that, is not a technological issue. It's very much not a technological issue. It's a social issue. It's a personnel issue. It's a training issue. It's an awareness issue. It's a mindset issue. It's a worldview issue. And so it's funny because, you know, I'm known as a technologist. If you read my newsletter, a lot of the stuff I talk about isn't technology at all. It's just about everything but technology, because the real challenges aren't what tool to use, how to use it, can we get our discussion organized into a nice hierarchy. The real challenge is, can we get people with experience and a certain comfort level in this new environment? And I don't think there's a way to do that, a one way to do that. I've never seen one way that works on anyone, on everyone in anything, so it's probably not the case here. So, you know, from the point of view of this discussion, then, my own interest is in trying to find out, trying to see what sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? The word that's in my head is manipulation, but that's not the word I want to use. The other word is social engineering, but I don't want to use that word either. But what sort of, oh, I can't think of a good word. Has anyone got a good word? Not that one.
Is it ideas engineering?
I don't want to use engineering, because it's not engineering either. Like, engineering is like building things.
Massaging.
Pardon?
Massaging.
Massaging, that's good.
Morphing.
Morphing, I like morphing. I thought you said morphing. I thought, oh no, another one of these weird Australian words. So, yeah, there are still Australian words I don't understand. Spruik? Good or bad?
Depends on the spruik.
Rort?
That's bad.
Depends who gets the end product.
And I want to know why in Australia, when you go to the store and you buy something and they say that'll be 45 cents, and then they thank you before you've given them the money. In Canada, they say, that'll be 45 cents, please, because you're asking for something, and then you give them, and then they say thank you. But here they say, that'll be 45 cents, thank you. So I haven't done anything yet.
Social engineering?
Social engineering.
Because it's a statement, not a question.
It's a
statement. You don't get a choice, you do
vote. Yeah, that's true. Well, you do have a choice. It's just, you know, if you take the thing and you end up paying in terms of time, a long time, large, not so friendly people. Yeah. So, what we thought we'd do, this, like I said, this is really unstructured. You will, I promise, get good content. For those of you who are here for content, and there's always some, there will be good content. Some of it will come from me. Some of it will come from Roz. Some of it will come from the other people in the group. And some of it will come from yourself. So if you just hang in there, there will be good content. Oh, and one more thing, too. As you may or may not know, as I've traveled throughout and given talks and stuff, I've been taping things. Actually, I've been using this wonderful little system. Oh, I got to plug it because this, you can see it on my computer here. Sitting there recording merrily away is a program called Audacity. Or in Australia, probably Audacity. that was bad. This is free software. Completely free software. Well, it's in my newsletter from today, so you just find that link. I think it's something like it's audacity.sourceforge.net, I believe is the link. But again, it's on my website. It's also, if you do a Google search under Audacity, A-U-D-A-C-I-T-Y, it's the first link. Free software, runs on Apple, runs on Linux, runs on Windows. And unlimited recording, multi-track, editing capability, transformation capability, exports as WAV, exports as MP3, and saves things as projects. Beautiful piece of software. I'm recording this talk. I've been recording all of my talks in it. This is what I mean about content, right? I mean, who's going to pay for songs in a world where anyone can record and where you can get one person recording, you know, do the bass track in India, the lead guitar track in Indonesia, and the vocals can come from Tennessee, and you just smoosh it all together. Oh, just brilliant stuff. And anyhow, here's the microphone. This, it's a condensing mic. It sort of picks you up if you're in the back of the room. So it sort of doesn't pick you up if you're in the back of the room and you mumble. So if you don't want your stuff to be recorded, sit in the back of the room and mumble. And I'll just leave this like this. So if you're talking and you notice you were not getting big squiggles, speak louder. So I just thought... And... this will be made available on my website sometime. All I have access to these days is dial-up, so I'm not really uploading these files at the moment because pre-compressed, they're 60 megabytes. Post-compressed, they're much better, but I need to get them up on my server and being streamed. But everything is going to be on my server, streamable, downloadable. Use it, abuse it, do whatever you want with it. That's the only way to deal with content in my mind. So you can take your own words, extract them out of context, and twist them around, and whatever you want. So, okay. So that's the recording bit. This microphone, by the way, is made by Sony. Cost me about $100. I splurged. I've got more multimedia capacity here. It's just unbelievable.
You get a good multi-directional table mic from Tandy for about $70.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. It's just I went into the Sony store. I don't know why they weren't selling the Tandy mic. Yeah. This is not the only one, but this has worked very well for me, and that's why I recommend it. Although it has a little battery that sometimes dies. So, yeah, what can you do? So, anyhow, we were thinking about where to begin with this, and we thought we'd probably begin with a brief round of introductions, because I know some of you, I don't know all of you, some of you may or may not know each other, so just do that briefly around first, and then after that, depending on the comments, tell us who you are, tell us where you're from, and tell us what your favorite color is. And you cannot repeat a color.
Oh.
So we'll start here. We'll work our way around the room. Yeah, are you really going to get to the back as quickly? Or no, actually, I should leave them to last, shouldn't I? Whatever. We'll go like this, I guess. And you have to specify an order when you do stuff like that. And then anything else that's on your mind, we want to keep it reasonably brief because otherwise we use the whole session. So that's why I just wanted a one-word thing like color. And then after that, we'll take a 45-minute break. No, I'm kidding. After that, I don't know where we'll go, but we'll go through that. We'll draw from what you guys say here, and then we'll work from there. So why don't we do that?
Okay.
Sounds good?
Yep.
And I'm
going to
sit down so that I'm not standing.
Yes. I'm Ellis. I'm currently director at Douglas Mawson Institute, one of our TAFE institutes, and I'm also South Australia's representative on the Framework Advisory Committee. My favourite colour is teal. The local football team has just won the national premiership, and their colours are black, white.
You'll be pleased to know I was up in Darwin when that happened. In Darwin, solidly port.
Okay, I'm Marlene Vento. I'm actually situated at Torrens Valley Cove, but I'm the state manager for Manscape. My favourite colour is pink.
Mark Hundricks, I'm Regency Institute. My role is flexible learning across the whole of the Institute. And for today, I'll have a favourite colour of yellow.
Kim Schutz from Learning Materials, a multimedia projects manager at Mat Learning Materials. Favourite colour at the moment is terracotta, because I just had to paint the house that colour. And I also spent a year in Canada.
All right,
back there.
Kate Fannin, I'm project manager for the Australian Flexible Learning Framework. And my favourite colour is blood red, grey.
Is that a colour?
Yes, you can see the Australian solver colour chart.
Oh, okay.
Dan Nicholas, and I'm with the Edna Online Tech Project, looking after the vet and those. Content and development in the direction. And my favourite colour would be cyan sunset for now.
I'm Margaret Granger, and I'm the Spencer Institute of TAFE, which is a very large regional institute. Well, Lincoln, we're 5 square metres, 4 tower. And I'm also the EdnaVet project manager, part-time role, and interim coordinator at the centre. And I'll choose indigo as my colour.
You were going to pick indigo?
I have one of my choices.
16 million colours.
Ross Gill, and currently I coordinate a lot of the framework activities in South Australia, as well as manage the framework program policy and research. And today I'm going for magenta.
Sandra Neville, I manage the information industry's applied design teams at Torrens Valley TAFE, and my favourite colour today would be chocolate.
Not just a colour, but also a flavour.
Yeah. Hi, Janet McMillan from Douglas Mawson and TAFE SA. I have a number of roles in professional development and flexible learning, and my favourite colour is contentious.
All right, let's have a vote. How many people think that's a colour?
And look like anything you'd like it to be.
How many people think that that's not a colour? The mob has spoken.
Does that mean I have to be severely reprimanded?
No, it just means you have to pick another colour.
You've got to conform, Jen.
No, hold it. Never conform. Contentious is a colour to me.
Okay, I'll follow that. My name's Bruce Henting, and what do? I'll do anything interesting that anybody asks me to do, really.
He's either a lawyer or a...
No, that doesn't sound interesting, but particularly around using technologies, and I too have a real passion for sort of low-tech, open source, sort of that, what I call the anarchic sort of platform type things. I really enjoy that. And my favourite colour is
FF0044. I have a complaint system here. Hang on.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it close to the black or white?
It might be brown.
It's
FS1.
Yes,
it's just FS0044.
There it is.
There we go.
Actually tell you what color contentious is.
Yeah.
It is possible, but I have to write a little HTML for it.
You could put it in the newsletter.
It might be on article about this in the newsletter.
I'm Anne-Marie Goss. I've been an instructional designer at Learning Materials Assistance for about a week. And so I'm very much sort of like a sponge soaking everything up. And my favourite colour is turquoise.
I'm Liz Pohl, I'm the manager of online education services in Cape Bay. My favourite colour for today is personal.
I don't know what colour person is.
Fruit.
Is it kind of like that?
Yeah.
A little more orange, okay.
I'm Anne Davenport. I'm an instructional designer with Learning Materials and Systems. And I think my favourite colour for the moment, since I've been just recently to the Barrier Reef, is aquamarine.
My
name's Marie Jadinski, and I work 3 days a week in KPSA, focusing on innovation in teaching and learning. And my favourite colour at this moment is amethyst.
There's no more ordinary colours anymore. Yellow.
Blue.
Yeah, I suppose. Pink's sort of an ordinary colour, but like it's not really an ordinary colour because it doesn't have a place in the spectrum. And so it's sort of like a second tier colour. It has to live in substandard housing.
Feel better now?
It still has more status than FF4400. Okay, next please. I don't know who's next. Way back there.
My name is Jean Ham. I'm the e-learning coordinator at Adelaide Institute of Tech. And I think my favourite colour is lilac.
I like lilac.
I'm Colin Johnson, another one of the instructional designers from the Elements. And I'm going to do what Maria suggested and not conform. So I don't know.
So I'd be black then.
I'm Reese Benning, and I'm going for translucent pink. Someone took pink from me, so I did. And I have a role at LA Institute of Tech, supporting flexible learning. And I also represent the adult community education sector on the flexible learning classroom.
I'm Fiona Fielke from the Wanga Tech, and I'm colourblind, so colour's quite relevant. I'm working as a lecturer and working in the industry, and I'm also a flexible learning leader at this year. Many of my favourite colours have already been nominated, but I'll have to go today for purple.
Purple. See, there's a good colour. Solid, traditional, establishment.
Regal, yes.
Okay. I think you're next.
Oh, Anne Denning from Barossa Valley Campus in the regional state. I'm the manager for educational development, which includes flexible learning and a whole range of other things that could be stuck in there. And my favourite is Burgundy.
Province of France.
It's not necessarily anything to do with the colour.
person who wishes she was elsewhere.
My name is Ken Chang. I'm from Online Education Services, and I'm looking after the learning platform. My color of the day is champagne.
I'm Marty Sealens. I think I'm technically employed by TAFE. I'm a professional projectionist. For those of you who know anything about projects, you know what that means. And, one of my favourite colours, my favourite colour for today will be ultramarine.
And I'm Stephen Downs. I'm a researcher and a philosopher, and my favorite color is green, which nobody took.
Yeah,
I can't believe it. I've never
had this. Have you
never
been?
I would remember the next color.
Oh, give me a break.
That's true.
RGB 00FF00.
Yeah, green is my favorite color, but I didn't know the hex.
You seriously didn't?
No, I didn't.
Oh, hex is easy. RGB, right? The first two digits are red, right? And the number system you're working in is hexadecimal, so 0 to F. So FF, that's as much red as you can get. 00, that's as little red as. RGB, red, green, blue. So what's green? 00, no red. FF, all green. 00, no blue. So, and what's really neat, I have a lot of fun doing this, right, is come up with a color that's just, RR, FF00FF, and you know now what the balances are, what color is it? Great little game. I'm not very good at it. That's why I had to check. I sort of had an idea, right, but you got to check these things. Okay, I've come up with a structure now. Chaos. Because I was sitting here. Here's how I came up with the structure, and you can overrule this if you don't like it. But because there's an awful lot of expertise in this room. There's a huge pile of expertise in this room. There's more expertise in this room than there is in my head, by a fairly wide margin. So the thing that we're talking about is collaboration systems. So it seems to me, why don't we just design one? So think about what we need to do, what sort of thing we're doing now, why doesn't it work, and what do we think would work? And forget about what exists. Forget about who controls the financial strengths and things. We'll deal with that later. That's the way I deal with these things, right? There's philosopher, right? Anything that has nothing to do, or anything that's a constraint is like an issue to be dealt with later. So that's how philosophers get to do these things. How does that sound? I'll throw that up to you first. That's what occurred to me. How does that sound to you, first of all, since it's your workshop?
No, it's your workshop.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's these people's workshop.
Yeah. How does that sound to you guys? All right. Do we have a whiteboard? Well, we've got a computer here. I don't know how much. Well, yeah, we can probably. Oh, wait, yeah. So let's use this computer. Let's use the one everyone can see. Yeah, that makes more sense. I'm just going to close out my nice pink color here, though, so we can see this sound. Save changes? No. And, oh, no. No, it's still on. All right. All right, let's follow standard procedure number 42. We need somebody to record stuff. Do we have any volunteers?
Okay, I'll
all right. So we'll just record on the screen here. So you don't need. So basically, just type stuff, and we'll all see it. Yeah, I'm just sort of thinking, though, we have one of these movable keyboards. I'm just not sure how movable it is. Well, it's obviously movable. I'm just not sure if it'll continue to work after it's been moved. But I'll give it to you.
Yep.
And
as we have a collaboration, we will work it out. We'll just pass it around the room until it works.
Nothing's happening.
No, it won't work on me.
Oh, you're right. You'll need a mouse.
Where we get a duck.
Yeah. Here's a mouse. Yes. All right. So you just stand there holding that.
You stuck it now.
This is what you call being volunteer. So.
It's working fine.
All right. Okay, so maybe open up WordPad or something like that.
Right.
What about
mine? Oh, we could do that.
If it's on there?
Where is it?
That'd be new for me.
It's in progress.
Where is it on
there? It's in
progress. It'd be in progress. Oh, it wouldn't be on this machine. No, it's not.
What are you looking for?
Mind manager?
No.
No.
Oh, well.
Well, Word or notepad, or not notepad,
accessories.
See, I'm waiting for the day we have a computer to just say, okay, let's take some notes now. The computer figures out what we want.
What's recognition?
I mean, that's the kind of philosopher. I don't need to worry about what Windows actually does or could ever do. I just think about what I want. I want to just hit, okay, let's take notes now, and the note-taking program that works best for me, just opens.
We're taking the note-taking program. But we'll start with this.
All right. Okay, we'll start with that. So, two places to start. I'm not sure which way to go. One place to start is...
Are you mad?
It's Freudian.
All right. I'm going to have a coffee.
Whoa.
Okay, that killed that pot. I almost killed two pots with one cup here. This is not good. Oh, yeah. I should ask. There's a break, right?
Are you at the break?
No, I mean, there will be one. All right. So, collaboration, communication. You guys are all working in the same sector, more or less the same state. What? Why? Not why are you in South Australia? I mean, why do you need collaboration? What on earth do you have to talk about? Pardon?
It's a bit lonely if we don't.
Okay, so friendship. Friendship slash... I like this kind of note taker.
Well, it says to share.
To share ideas. To learn from others. To build new ideas. Yeah, okay. We've gone through the vocabulary. Let's get concrete. Right? You know, to share, to learn. Yeah, right. What? To share what? To learn what? Let's be concrete. But you're learning? They want to learn? But the irony is, this is another one of those Australian words I don't know.
The words of concrete making company.
All concrete. All right.
Share experience.
And yeah, you are concrete. Get concrete. Well, I want to learn.
All right, April. I'm going to be really nasty. Well, I'm not going to be nasty. I'm just going to be evil. Think, because you're not going to get a whole lot of time.
Yeah.
You need to learn something right now, something that you need to learn. When I point to you, you're going to tell me what it is you're trying to learn, that you need to learn, or that you would want to learn right now, today. Well, not in this session, because obviously we're doing something different, but that was a joke. So... I'll just point and tell me something you need to learn right now. So, Marie, you're first.
About the future.
Okay.
How have you overcome sectional politics to actually get anywhere?
Okay. Right. We were going to get broadband in the bush, really.
Broadband in the bush.
Really.
How to design a learning object.
Yeah.
That's a whole bunch of things. Henry?
Everything.
I thought Marie's cooking came over. Right? How to get more funding. See, that's concrete. And you thought you were going to get away just typing things. Oh, how to get more funding, and you also have to tell me what you need to learn. That's pressure.
What?
How to manage teaching and learning assets.
I'm trying 60 words a minute.
I'm kind of psychology.
Figure out.
After what? What was that?
Type 60 words a minute? I don't know. I'm putting words in the ear, Mom. This is you speaking here.
What are we actually doing?
I'm sorry?
What are we actually doing? What is a collaborative system? What is the purpose of this?
Well, that's what I'm trying to establish. The purpose of this is to find out what we want to collaborate, if anything. Because what we want to collaborate determines the sort of system that we have. If we want to create recipes, we'll use one system. If we want in-depth knowledge, we'll use another system. If we want to chat with our friends, we'll use another system. So,
system as in technology, as in software, as in bulletin board, is that what you're talking
as
about?
As in approach. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More or less? Okay. All right. So, I don't know, are we learning anything from this so far?
Well, we're really trying to change. Are we trying to choose a topic that we then might select and then work on? Is it?
Well, what I'm trying to do is get at what the collaboration needs are, because collaboration is one of these jargon words, right? Everybody said, yeah, we want to collaborate. And then they immediately move to, well, gee, let's have a shared drive on the network, right? And, or whatever. It has nothing to, and it's not clear that people think about what it is that they need to do before they pick and for design or whatever technology. And I know it's fuzzy and mushy, but I mean, if you don't know what you want to say to each other, there's no point proceeding forward, right? So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to sort of get at that with some leading questions or things like that. But what I'm trying to do here is get at what should be going back and forth between you, if anything. So maybe this isn't the exact way to go about it, but I don't know. Comments?
Well, my experience has been that we find the solution and then we try and figure out what we're going to do with that solution. And we use the word like collaborate or to teach or to learn or whatever it is as the rationale. Mm-hmm. I found that if you don't go back, every time you take people back to the basics, say, well, what are you trying to achieve? Why are you trying to achieve that? What are you hoping to get out of it? They start to go, well, that's a bit different to what I thought I was doing.
Right.
And I think it's a critical part of the thinking process. You've got to map out what a...
Speaking of okay, so I'm not familiar with this tool, so this will be kind of fun.
Not anymore.
I understand there was a large consumer demand for software that wouldn't install.
It's not going to let me do it. Doesn't like it.
Oh well. I'll stay with the simple, obvious text-based.
That's So what's the problem? You're saying that we need to find the solution, but surely, I mean, have I missed the problem? What is the problem that we're trying to find the solution for?
I was led here under the pretense. No, I'm just kidding. My understanding is that there is a desire to improve communication and collaboration among people in different sectors in the state. Is that a good assessment?
Yep.
Well, let's. But that's a fair question. Is that a problem?
Well, it is a problem because we're doing things like reinventing the wheel. So we've got limited resources. Unless we know what each other are doing, we can't then utilise the current resources effectively to make bigger investments, not bigger, but you know, to make more efficient.
To do things better, to do things more efficient.
I can't read your name.
Janet. And also, one of the things is that we need to look at it as a sharing of knowledge, not just a collection of, you know, that information sits and nobody accesses them. I think we're really good at doing that. I think, you know, we're really good at finding answers and then putting them somewhere. But it's about actually being able to share it in such a way that it's a transfer and growth of knowledge, not just a collection of knowledge.
And just adding on to that, like I've noticed that some people might have a lot of resources and other people haven't got any. This might be teaching resources, let's say in a particular program. One institute might have quite a lot of resources that might be in filing cabinets or whatever, and other institutes other people might have started up a program and they have hardly any. And so how can we collaborate in a way that people can know what's around and then draw on those resources and then perhaps customise them, make them better, and then make them available for other people to use so that staff can create their materials on the run as they need. No, so that's one area of collaboration that I would like to see happening.
If I can, another example of that, which is not to do with materials, but it's common in institutes, for instance, to have somebody who's responsible for the development of a course, and there's a course going on for that year or whatever. Often that will be recorded on a Word document or something and stuck away in the filing cabinet. So the client doesn't even get to see online that information about that course that is actually made. Somebody's done a record that has happened and it might go up statistically through the system, but there's no workflow that pulls that information out from where the person is put in who's responsible for the course. That actually puts that information up on the web for the client. And you might get into a yearbook the following year, but often courses are run at the drop of a hat where there's not enough students or not. It's a workflow issue. And the person who's actually inputting the information often doesn't have a system in place, or the institution doesn't have a system in place that grabs that information and puts it to all the new systems possible. And this is a really common problem with the Edna, is finding out what sources have been delivered in one time. We can find out a lot of information about who's registered to deliver courses, but it's very difficult to find out who's delivering a course where at what is at any particular time. In an online
Okay, so most people are saying there's an issue. You said there isn't a collaboration issue?
At the level of people's willingness to collaborate, there's no issue there, not that I've found.
Okay, but in the actual practice of it?
We don't have the system. I mean, we actually have come from a system of competitiveness, and you can't turn that off and turn on the other system overnight and expect to have all of the things in place at a systematic level for collaboration to happen.
And that's, I mean, that's at every level in terms of learning resources, development, information, whole new bank. And you also have lecturers who want to maintain control over what they do, what happens behind closed doors in the classroom, etc., etc. And in some senses, what I'd like to see is that kind of creativity is preserved. That we hang on to something.
But there's two ways of preserving it, isn't it? One is to lock it up, and the other one is to put it out there with your name on it, so that everybody recognises that that's who it belongs to.
Absolutely.
And we've tended to do the first one. Everybody locks it up, so nobody shares. Around this room, we've got a whole lot of people with a whole lot of great innovative ideas and a lot of potential, but I bet it would be difficult for any one of us to list all of those things.
Oh, yeah.
Because we just don't know what we've got, and we don't have good mechanisms at the moment for making it available, for recognising who created it, and for sharing it. That's what I'd like to be able to discover, how we do that.
I just wanted to highlight from that Stephen another aspect of collaboration, and that is collaboration among learning, between learning. It's a bit of a passion of mine, but I think that I'd like to see collaborative learning communities across all of TAFE and across Australia and across the world with our students coming together and sharing their knowledge. So I think that's another dimension.
Yeah, well, let me ask, and then I'll go right to you. What would learners say to each other, aside from, did you see the footy game last night? The reason why I ask that question is because collaboration among learners is something that's often thought of as a good thing, but the learners themselves don't necessarily see it that way. So I want to pull that out just a wee bit.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm thinking of it not just leaving the learners by themselves, but having some facilitation and having community of practice, or that could be facilitated by a practitioner as well. But it's not. I'm thinking of it not as a practitioner or facilitator to the students, but incorporating and connecting in with other learners or other communities, perhaps the cross-site example, or all the community services students becoming together and sharing some projects or interacting at some level in their learning.
Just two things, because things have happened now. On Ross's point, your point about learners talk about the footy, well, I'd say that that's probably a good thing, and that there's learning in that anyway, and that when trust is built, then they spend less time talking about things that are not very personally challenging in terms of their own ideas and concepts and sharing them. So there's a growth level in it's kind of community and how they share. So I think talking about informal stuff is a learning process. But besides that, I think one of the critical factors is that we need a paradigm shift away from thinking that content is king, that we need to share content as a hardware, and that's the way we're going to make changes in the way we collaborate. I think it's about how, and that I think we need to create channels or frameworks or processes that allow people to be valued for talking about what they're doing, not finally building something into a learning object or a hard piece of content and then say, well, here it is, it's up here, come and share it. I think the sharing needs to be shifted in the way we think about it, and we get to talk a lot more about what we're doing, and that's how you transfer knowledge. So it's a shift in the way we think about what's important. So conversation becomes king, not content. Anyway, that's
mine. Yeah. I'd like to see a marriage of both of those, because having facilitated collaborative learning online with learners across states, they won't go there just to talk about nothing, or that excitement dissipates very quickly. Yes, the social thing is really important, and it's a part of that process of building trust, but then there's got to be something in there for them. They've got to see that there's a point to this whole process. But there are some really good models out there on the net, like the Schools Project, which runs nationally and internationally, where threw this up at Torrens last year. What if design students at Torrens were linked with someone in Canada doing Torrens, and they were looking at a design project, and they were actually exchanging solutions for design, suddenly instead of seeing only the design world of their lecturers in their little institute, they are exposed to maybe uncomfortable, conflicting other designs. What would that do for their world of learning? And I'm sure that's where the learners would perceive the value, particularly since we're operating outside of our state now. We've got to operate in a bigger mind. And if that's presented up and they've got a project, they've got something that they're aiming for, then I think learners and my experience has been learners are highly motivated and excited by what they're doing. And the teacher becomes just a facilitator and secondary, and then they start really going for it. And then the whole process is collaborative, and the way you design it is that they need each other to get to that end. So that no one section or one part, whether it be Australia or Canada or Victoria or South Australia, is designed so that each needs the work that the other's doing to get the whole. And that propels them ahead. And so, because we keep saying that we've got to collaborate, we've got distributed teams in the workforce, we aren't going to all be in one office, I think we can sell it to learners that collaborative is an employability skill, it's a life skill, and that it needs to be in all our training.
So in a sense, the collaborative is sort of like the learning process. But backing that up might be a whole lot of content that people can draw on and use and manipulate as they go through that process.
Well, it might be creating.
And then they might add more to it, yes, add more content to it.
If you're if you're constructivist rather than instructivist, you're not just going to recreate something according to instructions.
No.
Plus, I think it's not just the process, the collaboration, they have a skill at the end.
Yeah.
It's also an outcome, an immeasurable outcome.
One of my many jobs over the last little while has been in learning support, where I work with individual learners. And as I've seen the growth of much more self-paced, flexible delivery, I haven't seen a complementary growth of flexible support, flexible access to staff, each other, all tutorials, those sorts of things. In fact, I think what's happened is it's actually gone backwards. That would be my observation, that there's actually less, because flexible means often notes given out, no tutorials, no collaboration set up, and I see a lot of very frustrated learners who are learning through much more flexible and self-paced ways with much less support than I might have got previously. It's a real concern for me.
Okay, let's see how our notes are doing here. We do have the software ready. Have you caught up?
Yep.
Is this going to produce metadata for us too?
Yes.
Seriously?
Coffee, I think.
Yeah, I was wondering. Yeah, and I need somebody to do my laundry, so maybe it'll do that too. Okay. Collaboration in order to. Whoops, it moved. I don't know. I like pictures and math, but I'm a traditional. I like sentences.
You can have sentences. Where do you want the sentences?
Oh, I don't know. Inside a paragraph. Well, I don't know, because, like, anyhow, never mind. It's just me being fuddy-duddy. All right. Why don't you tell us what we've got? This is.
Well, let's have a look at the earlier stuff.
Right.
We're trying to figure out how to type sticky words in there, which we weren't going to do that. We're trying to preserve communication in order to, and things that people talked about, the capacity to preserve creativity, share content, or at least ideas about that content, share experiences, to reinvent conversations or regenerate conversations in the digital era. A lot of talk about constraints, about digital limited resources, we're dispersed, we've got barriers, we don't know who's doing what, we're in a culture of competitiveness, no core value, there's no core cultural sharing, we're living with control mentalities. Not many opportunities at the moment, and we're starting to get into talking about what are some of our perceptions, like learners don't always see the value of this experience, so so where did that go? So the question is, what are the implications of these things? And then we're starting to talk about using it again, raising the issue of wanting to be able to look for new ways of supporting learners because of the constraints, some of the constraints with like distance or technologies that we're using. It was an idea about, well, it's a new way of looking at the learning experience, and that is one where you're just bringing people from all over the world together, or from over the planet, to share ideas, to work with each other, learn new ways of seeing things. So there's a mixture of stuff. There's things that we can do with it, and there's things we're trying to overcome with it, and the things we're trying to achieve with it. Yeah, so overcome and trying to achieve.
Okay. See, this is better content than I would have given it. I think, anyways. And in a form, I certainly wouldn't have given it to you. All right. Yahoo groups. Who knows it? Okay. Would Yahoo groups achieve the objectives as described here?
Some.
Okay. What would it help us with?
Well, it'd give you a single platform right across all the institutions.
Consistent platform. Right. Certainly, it's a way to share content or ideas about content, but ample evidence that it works for that. Share experiences. You know, it's, I don't know if you saw the short article I wrote describing or summarizing the talk by Aaron Brewer at the Instructional Technology Institute in Utah, analyzing the use of Yahoo groups by communities of practice to share knowledge, to ask questions, to exchange resources. But sharing ideas, sharing experiences, collaboration, all of these were aspects or facets of the learning communities that grew up around certain topics on Yahoo groups. What wouldn't it do?
We talk about Yahoo groups.
Right.
Wouldn't provide people for an opportunity to try stuff out. I'd like to see something that one of the things with all of this and sharing, I'd start to feel really serious, like I should be, frowning, because this is really serious stuff. And I think that there has to be an element or somewhere where people can learn about new things, if we find out about mind mapping or Moodle or, our new Jamison platform, we need somewhere where we can just get in there and get our hands dirty and have a go at things and not be sort of things we have to be serious. So
playground.
Yeah, sort of like a playground. And that's the learners that both our students need a playground somewhere where they can feel that way, and so do we when we're learning new things to be able to learn how to do things.
Sure.
We have this big thing, especially, a lot of us feel that we have to be good at it straight away, or else we're too frightened to have a go, because we might look stupid. Mm-hmm. There's that whole performance thing that happens, so we could have a place just to cross that out.
Happily, that doesn't apply to me. I just go in there and look at it.
Wiki, for example, do that, like with Wiki sites. They'll say, go and play in the sandbox, or go and play in the playground, and it's a place where you can go make a, Wiki's doing this anyway, but you can make as big a mess as you like, and it's making a difference, and that's the sort of thing we need, a place, where you can go and play, you can try things, you can test them, and it's not going to break the server, it's not going to break the bank, it's not going to break anything.
For me, I had to go up Tripod and made my own webpage. And that might seem a long way back to other people who are already doing all that stuff, but it's really nice for me to do it and everybody can see it, and I can, it's pretty ordinary, but it's a start for me, and that was really nice to be able to do.
Absolutely. Okay, so, Sam Kitt, I'm not sure if Kitt's the word we want there. maybe it's an Australian.
It is.
Okay. Sand pit, different connotations in North America. It's like a trap, a thing you can't escape from. The monster at the bottom.
We have big pits.
not the same area. Yeah. Sandbox is what we use. Okay. So, all right.
In Australia, a sandbox is what your cat uses.
Oh.
Yeah. Isn't it nice that we share a language?
You see different things in it.
Yes, that one too.
There's a site out there, and I forget the name of it off the top of my head, but if you searched on my site, you might even find it. That what they've done is they've installed instances of a whole bunch of learning, a whole bunch of content management systems. You know what it is off?
Yeah, it's called Open Source CMS.
Open Source CMS, that's it. And you go to that site, they give you administrator access to a whole bunch of content management systems. So you log in, you go, you mess it up. And then basically what they do is it wipes clean. I think it's every hour or something. Like, it's 2 hours, right. So there's a sandbox. A wiki is a sandbox of a different sort. A wiki is, you know, just creating content on the fly. Anybody can edit any web page. Anybody can add a page, link to any page, link to external sites, write about your cat, write about whatever. So now, let's suppose we had Yahoo Groups. Because people seemed okay with Yahoo Groups so far. Oh, yeah, okay, you're looking at that.
Oh,
yeah, but putting the E in open would probably help.
I think CMS is joined, so yeah, that's it.
Yeah, there we go. And what was that link? OpenSourceCMS.com. I guess we probably could have figured that one out. Oh, well. It's kind of fun watching this thing sort of build itself. Is it going to create itself as a web page with clickable links?
Okay.
See, that's why I like doing it. I get to learn all kinds of things doing these things. Okay, suppose we had Yahoo Groups. And suppose we had Open CMS, except maybe it'd be something like Open LCMS for the learning, or Open whatever, right? Just something... an installation somewhere with these tools or with whatever the students would use or whatever just to plug in. And suppose we had a wiki for people who just want random content. Would that do everything? What wouldn't it do?
Depends on the functionality of the CMS. It's a bit hard to say.
Oh, the CMS is just a plug-in, right? It's not doing anything. The CMS there is just you're playing it. We're not actually using it to communicate. We're using the Yahoo Groups for that.
I know this is what you're asking, but to me, a lot of the problems with some of these spaces is the motivation and the getting people to change their mentality to these places that we're not. In a verbal exchange environment anymore, in the technology, we're using technology to asynchronously exchange. And that seems to be one of the big hurdles, is to get people to put that in their mental agenda and as a sort of a work practice and all that sort of stuff. It's a difficult thing for some people.
Very
difficult. I just mean that, to me, one of the challenges is having mental scans is being able to jump in and out different frames of reference, different ways of doing things, different communities, having the whole pattern, and then taking what you need and then developing your own.
Yeah.
And then you've got, so the analysis, synthesis, all that stuff. I mean, I don't know, is that transient resonance, like you go in, you resonate, you go out, you know, in, out and on. It's a mindset more than how you use the tool. I don't think the tools are the issue. I think it's the mental model behind it all.
I think there's another issue there too. I think there is a problem with budget, time constraints, the changes that are happening within an organisation. I don't think it really matters what we put in there at the moment. People haven't got time to go in the places.
But I think that's a mental sanity issue. Everyone's got, say, 24 hours in their day.
Yep.
How you choose to use that time, how you choose to use your money, And it's an attitude.
Yeah, I understand that, but the reality is that there are a lot of people who are now in a situation where they're just feeling totally frustrated and so stymied. It's stymieing the innovation and the
If you allow yourself to do it, you will be. But if you choose not to do it, you won't be.
But you listen to some of the people out there, and these are the comments that we've been getting, that people are feeling burdened down by the bigger issues at the moment.
I guess the thing, I said to somebody once, not long ago, that my impression that what's going on now is this is another one of the 7-year cycles. We go through this every 7 or so years. And so 3 times in the time that I've been in the department we've gone through this, and it really hasn't stopped people from doing some quite remarkable things. And that's what I'm trying to figure out is we've been saying this, what you're saying, and it doesn't mean it's not true, but we've been saying it ever since I've been working for this organisation, and yet people still manage to achieve those goals. Yeah. Because one of the things that I've discovered is that some of this stuff is not an additive, it's a way of helping me make my job more interesting, or easier, or fun. And I'm prepared to spend time and effort if that's one of the rewards. If somebody said to me, money, you've got to do it, I said, get me.
I agree, there are certainly people out there who are doing really great things at the moment, but there's also a real dilemma for a vast majority of people, the bureaucracy sort of issue.
Well, let's look at that, because I work in the government now. So I'm beginning to understand bureaucracy in the intimate way that I never ever wanted to understand. What's taking up all this time?
One of the things that I think comes into it too is that what you're saying, I think what both people are saying is true, that it does take a lot of time, and what Marty says that sometimes that you get an outcome and it actually saves you time in the end. However, you've got to go through that time where the researching time and sorting it out time takes away from you being able to get on with your real job. You know, like things that in your real job, there might be certain outcomes that you have to have because, you know, there are demands on you. And whilst you're hunting and exploring and trying to work out things, you're not getting those jobs done. And, you know, you can get into real strife because you haven't got the outcome. So what seems to be, it's like, is it that what we need is a method of coping, a process, or an accepted method of process, that a certain amount of our time needs to be put into this exploratory part of our job, you know, and developing skills that contribute to improvement down the track. And we can't do it all at once, it's just sort of a step-by-step improvement thing.
I think everybody's trying to contain things, and you can't contain a lot of this.
Yeah.
And I think our bureaucracy likes to try and put nice parameters around it and make it orderly, and it's not. It's very fluid, and I think you can jump in and out of these things and grab what you want and bugger off and do the next thing, and everybody thinks, I need to learn that skill set properly. Whereas sometimes you can just graze around and go with it, but it doesn't actually fit in particularly well with the mindset of the organisation. And I think that's the struggle that we have, is like, you know, it wants to be, well, some people want to contain it and make a nice system out of it all. Mm. And what's happening is it's growing in a non-systematic sort of way. Mm. So the two things are at odds with one another. And I think that's what Marie's talking about, is in this sort of mindset. You've got to sort of chill out.
Yeah.
Go with it.
Okay, in the back there.
Sorry. Something that's making this point a little bit more complex, I think, is that you can spend a lot of time wasting or wheel spinning if you're in the wrong paradigm to this. And it really depends on the bureaucracy's vision. And an example, again, that I'd give would be that in flexible delivery, like trying to move into a flexible delivery of this environment, if the bureaucracy believes that environment is where you have every student has a computer in the classroom, and that you have to have a big enough pipe to pipe to all of these things so that they can have 24/7 access to what they can get at home or whatever as well. But all of those people are online on their own machine at the same time. That's a very different sort of paradigm to this one, where we're sitting in front of a blackboard, if you like, and we're having a class, and we can go into this space at any time when we go home. Like the difference in the demands on the budget for the bureaucracy is totally different. So the vision of the bureaucracy can severely restrain the way that you try to problem solve what's happening for you in your life, what you have to solve in order to become a good online flexible delivery type teacher or learner or whatever. So I think it's one of the biggest. We need to sort out some of this in terms of we could be chasing our tails trying to deliver something that is not really appropriate. Within a vehicle, it's not really appropriate. And therefore, having to spend a lot of time learning new tools and all these things that are really forced upon us for maybe experience based.
I think we're looking at that question very much between proving and improving. You know, working within the government sector, but also at a time of great change, we've got that dual function that we're trying to address both in various aspects, where there's the proving aspect, where there's the accountability, we have to have certain systems in place, we have to be able to respond to queries, we've got to be able to have certain, you know, runs on the board, all that quantitative stuff. But at the same time, that whole focus on improving and all that kind of stuff, which we do, you know, as a matter of course with education, and particularly at the current time with, you know, enormous rates of change, and we want to focus on innovation and all that sort of stuff, there becomes a real tension between those two. And how do we manage to address the both within our roles? And given too that we're all going to be different in, you know, prioritising one over the other, given our context. Yeah, quite personality wise, work group wise, section wise, institute wise.
One of the things I'm intrigued by, one of the things I'm not in any way, shape or form uncertain about is that whatever I want to do in terms of collaboration online, it's there. The tools have been there for years. Like, if I want to chat, if I want a forum, if I want to post a comment, there's no shortage of it. It's growing rapidly. So the resources are there. Most of us have got relatively cheap access to the internet. Most of us have got access to broadband, even our students study together. So the technology is not the barrier. And in fact, even time is really not the barrier, because it's actually not hard to set. It's actually easier for me to set up an online classroom than it is to try and negotiate a timetable space that I used to take. It takes me less time and less heartache, and I don't have to worry about the security people telling me not to drink coffee in the classroom. So what's stopping us from... Now, it's no use, it's really no use anyway, so that's why people aren't using it, because it really doesn't work even though we think it does. Or there's something else. So what's the barrier?
I'm sitting and listening to all of the points made here with interest, because they're all very valid points. But from the work perspective that I have of 4 years now of looking after the managing LearnToGo teams, where people are given time permission and given some of the barriers are taken away for a period of time and say, okay guys, go for it. It's really interesting that the ones who really do something were probably going to do it anyway. The ones who don't, and their facilitators constantly come to me and say, it's such a headache, I can't get them motivated, I can't get them to come to workshops, I put up a forum, they won't go on it. It's got nothing to do with taking away the barriers of funding, time and all of that stuff, because they weren't going to do it anyway. So I'm actually inclined to go with what Marty, Marie and some of the others have sort of been saying, in that it's actually where it works
quite well is, once again, in my own context, where the emphasis has not been so much on the tools and looking at the systems, but the emphasis is on changing their attitudes, showing them different things, taking away the blinds so that they see something different, which means that they may be able to turn into somebody who, despite all of the barriers and systems, is going to do it anyway.
I think that it works best if a lecturer or a program picks up a particular way of delivering because it solves a problem for them. Mm-hmm. So in my experience with video conferencing, it was the only way to deliver because we had the, you know, tiny groups of people, students at various sites. So once you've said to them, it's on VC or it's not on, then people said, okay, this is a problem for our students that we will solve this way. If you still always keep opening the Canvas doors and filling classrooms, then it's not a problem that needs solving, except if you really look at it and say, there are people who don't access that, who can't access that for a whole range of reasons. So how are you going to solve that problem for your students?
I just really like to emphasise again what Marlene was saying, but it goes back to what Marie was saying at the beginning, the mindset. There are two things. One is that being released from the shackles of how we've all been educated and brought up and how it works, and we're often not aware of it, and we just go along at an unconscious level about what's right, and we just don't even open the door to see anything else because we just can't. The black nothingness of our thinking is there. Then there's the other thing about, you know, having a problem to solve or having an inducement or a real reason or purpose to do it. Often in the LearnScope stuff, we're trying things out, but okay, trying it out for what? What real purpose or excitement have I got at the end? What am I going to get from talking to this person, trying out how chat works or whatever? So I think that's a real problem. In the inherent design, we almost need to have a project base so that there's an investment in them for what they're going to get out of it, separate to the experience of learning about how to chat or whatever. Then the other thing which has hit me in the last couple of weeks since I'm doing a research project is the number of students who don't actually have these resources at home. I had some tell me that in one class there's a vet tape of students. That person was the only person who had online access at home. That person had tried to access it, talk to other students outside class, and it was impossible. So they met face to face when they were doing a shared project. And I asked this question of the other classes, and I'm getting a large number who only access to online technology is through tape, coming to tape. So maybe we've made some assumptions there too.
The access issue is an interesting one because young people do actually have access to a lot of technology. Most students in our classroom certainly have mobile phones, and a lot of them are getting iPods and stuff like that. They're certainly not going to invest in this sort of thing that we're talking about here unless there's a good reason to invest in a mobile phone or an iPod or something like that. But we really haven't given them a reason to want to engage with this, because the few times that many of them have engaged, they thought, you've got to be joking. Mm-hmm. And so there's no reason to come back. But there are things they do, technology things they do spend a lot of money on, and they do go back to. And I remember a director telling me some years ago saying, when we were starting in this direction, saying people are not going to spend $500 on a computer that can go onto the internet.
Right.
No, but they're going to spend $1,000 on a multimedia mobile phone. And so, where's the incentive for them in most cases?
It's been interesting reading your novel daily about being in Australia and not having access to wireless technology. because, like, you know, like when you go to the States or go to Canada, it is just ubiquitous. Everywhere you go, students learning under trees with their phones, that parallel learning that happens, they're all doing different things on their computers and they're talking about it. And that's collaborative learning to me. And it's the enablement, as long as we're stuck to desks and inside, and we're not mobile, I think once we get that idea in our heads that we've got to change the infrastructure, then I think the whole thing will change.
It will change, but yeah, my perception here is technology is a necessary but not sufficient condition.
Yes, yes, yes.
In my case, it was a necessary but not existing condition. But it's sort of it's funny because when I was here in Australia last time, access was kind of pretty similar to what it was at home, and now it's sort of like things stopped here. So what happened?
Well, that you have the tech is access is not bad.
Yeah. It's just my perception of it.
Yeah,
we've been to different places.
Yeah. That's true, yeah.
I've been in a cheap hotel,
though. Darwin Northern Territory, Adelaide.
Well, yeah, actually, this is like a continental tour on a dime, you know.
Yeah. Steve, I'd like to hear more about that. What is the difference? What have you perceived? And I'd like to hear a bit more about what you're seeing happening outside Australia, because you've got our ideas here, and what is happening elsewhere about collaboration and overcoming some of these issues. So I'm sure what we're saying here today isn't different. But I'd like to hear if there's other sorts of solutions or options of what's happening.
Well, I mean, there's some things are good and some things are bad.
Yeah, sure.
That's too bad, because I was enjoying the other content. But yeah, it's the same sort of things that are being talked about here are the sort of things that I'm seeing elsewhere. The technology is available. Yes, there are issues of access from place to place and from person to person, but mostly, from my perception, it is an issue of the attitudes going in. And that's kind of why I wanted to take this particular workshop in the direction that I did, that plus the fact that I didn't have a plan. That's a joke. There's the presumption always. There's always the presumption that, you know, something like this, great, and this is really prevalent in the States, and it's kind of prevalent in Canada, and it's sort of there in Europe. Right? Great, we have this need. We'll bring in the expert. The expert will map out a technical architecture which will solve our problem for us. And I've seen people spend organizations. You know, they go through this process, they invest in the technology, they get the content management system or whatever, they put it in, and then it sits there, and it stays empty. So, in my case, let me just really personally for a little bit, because I would, and the reason why I'm here, and it's not, you know, some sort of special knowledge or anything like that, the reason why I'm here is basically because to a large degree, I've solved this communication problem. Right? I communicate with most of you on almost a daily basis. And there are very clear and open channels for you to communicate back to me, and I hear it from a lot of you on a regular basis. And so the question is, well, how did that happen? Well, in my case, one thing that happened is I stopped answering my telephone. I don't use a telephone. It's kind of bothered people here because, you know, I'm missing from my talk in Darwin. And quite literally, I vanished, and they were wondering where I was. I had no phone. They couldn't phone me. You know, that was just actually down the hill off the beach, right? So, you know, they couldn't phone me. But I saved myself gobs of time just by killing my telephone. No, still some people who actually think they can contact me by phone and they leave a message, even though my answering machine said, I will not listen to this message. Send me an email. And they leave a message. So that's part of it.
I've cut out what to me is inefficient technology. Now, other people use phones, need phones, want phones. I'm not saying to everybody kill your phones, because that would be really stupid. But what I am saying is, in the first instance, selectivity is crucial. And I'm very selective. I also don't drive for very similar reasons. People spend an hour, 2 hours. It was somebody this morning was saying, it's so great. I can get here, Adelaide Transport is so great. I can get here to work in like 27 minutes or something. Well, that's an hour a day gone. Driving, right? So I don't drive. So it's selection. That's part of it for me. And what I observe is I don't see that selectivity taking place. I see it in the younger generation. The younger generation, if they think of technology as useless, they won't touch it, which is why you probably can't get them into your learning management systems. But they do adapt, and change the technologies that are useful. The other thing for me that has worked and been really important is the habitual aspect of it. I do my newsletter, and I've been doing it for a very long time now, and it's just the thing that I do, right? And even today, I've got various events and things scheduled, right? But I've got a time slot to go do my newsletter, because that's what I do, because that's the communication. Now, I'm not wedded to this. I do skip days from time to time. I didn't have a nervous breakdown when I flew here to Australia because I was going to miss a day of the newsletter. I'm that important. But the habitual thing, and the thing is, the newsletter, my newsletter, is not about sending stuff to all of you. My newsletter began for me as a way for me to organize and store my own information. I just happened to make it available. So what it was very simply is, I just created a little space on my own website where when I found a resource that would be useful to me in the future, I put it in there. And that allowed me to search and retrieve if I needed it later, whatever. I have it. That's what it was. So the newsletter for me was just simply a notebook. And, it's funny, this morning, not just this morning, but many times, I sit down at a meeting, and I'm even looking around this meeting here, and I'm using paper. Right? What are you doing? How is this information going into your system? How are you going to do a text-based search on this?
We're going to copy that.
Right? I walk around with this thing, my computer, and if there's notes that need to be taken or whatever, I'm typing them down. I'm getting much better notes from this session. I'm recording it.
I think there is things that, like the mobile phone issue 4 or 5 or 6 years ago, it was deemed uncool to have a mobile phone. Or was it that longer than that? And it's still sort of uncool to pull out a notebook and start typing.
Yeah, well, get over it.
I just decided not to.
So, seriously, to me, my communication is part and parcel of my note-taking, is part and parcel of my research. You don't just get part of it. And that's a few of you, because I really enjoyed the conversation that took place before, because you guys were getting it. You don't get part of the picture, right? You don't just do the communication and everything else goes on the way it was, right? The communication is part and parcel of the process. I wrote this article for Educause Review, which is a print publication, but it's online, that's why I said I'd do it, about blogging. And
one of the things I said about blogging is the production of a blog is only the end point and the accidental output of a much more complex process. Right. That's just the thing that happens at the end. It's kind of like the period at the end of the sentence. You get a blog post, and that's the sharing, right? But the mindset, the idea of, okay, I'm in this electronic environment. My data collection is electronic. I work this way. I'm collecting research for my work. All of my articles, I've written lots and lots of articles, well, not all of them, but 90% of my articles have come from things like me posting something on a mailing group, a mailing list. And if you go in there and you look at my website and you look at my articles, you'll actually see posted to DOS, whatever, whatever. You know, and these things turn into papers. But to me, when I post it up into DOS, that's done. And they keep trying to get me to edit them. And I say, well, no, it's done. If you want references, you put them in yourself. and it's sort of pulling back a little bit. Communication, writing articles, storing research, it's all part and parcel of the same thing. And we have these categories. And we think communication is this category, but it isn't. So that's part of it. And then I had a perfect sentence or something like that, but it's not there anymore. But the third part of it, I think, is the modeling of stuff. And we read about, like some of the Canadian government people making recommendations, okay, where should e-learning go now and all of that, and one of the big recommendations, well, the government should actually model what it is they expect the rest of society to do. And actually use some of this stuff themselves. Of course, they're kind of hesitant to do that. And my own thinking is that if they actually had to use this stuff, they'd stop funding it. And so, for me, again, a big part of the way I communicate with people is not through saying things, but by doing things. How many of you have a blog? A lot better than I expected. Four out of the room. How many of you routinely share papers and articles online on a website or something like that? Same four. you see what I mean? All right, the communication begins with the modeling, the practices that you want. Go for it.
That's a particular learning style.
Yeah.
Right, so not everybody naturally will share in a blog. There are other ways.
It's also a discipline. If you actually write it, you have to do a lot of analysis and synthesis and articulate your idea into words. And there's something different about that than just talking about it.
That's a good point. One of the things is that in our traditional teaching modes, the only way a lot of students will share is if there's four or five other students in the classroom and a topic from which they're going to share it. But the problem with that is that when they actually go into real life, whether it's outside of the classroom or into a job or whatever, they don't always have that luxury of being able to share or solve problems using that approach. And so that's the whole one of our challenges is to give them those repertoires where these things have become natural, but the question is, how are we going to do that? Because they're going out, in a sense, crippled, because they've only got a limited repertoire of communication and problem solving tools. And so, what are we going to do to change that? It's not just about content; it's about a way of doing stuff.
What do you think of the idea of imprinting? But when you take that, say, the e-learning world. A lot of people's first impression is through the learning management system. And if you hear it in the language, they equate the online world with their first experience of it. So if it's been a free range, and they're lucky to bypass their learning management system, they have a different mental model of what that world is like. If it's like something like a learning management system, you hear it in the language, like it's a web CT or it's a, like... It's a very strong thing.
Yeah, well, it's the old first impressions thing. Yeah. But it's also kind of interesting because there's been all kinds of work done in network theory and small worlds networks and structures of networks, and the thing that comes into the mind first has an advantage when it comes to creating associations and in the mind, that would be ideas and beliefs. But I think it can be overcome. But yeah, I mean, if you give somebody a bad experience to begin with, they'll continue to have that idea. I try to give people a good experience to begin with on my site. The problem is they never discover my site until it's too late. I don't know.
Stephen, I was just interested in listening to what you were saying just then, because in a sense, what I was hearing described was a lifestyle.
Yes.
A lifestyle that incorporated the use of e-communication tools as a major component by which you communicate with other people and which you gain knowledge and share knowledge. And I was while you were talking, I was reflecting on my own path, because I guess I've sort of been involved with e-technology really only for about 13 years or so. And there's been a lot of blood, sweat and tears associated with it, really. I think because it's so new and so foreign from the way that I was used to communicating and dealing with people. And I can see that in a lot of other people that are going through that same process. Like, when I used to sit down to a computer, I would come out in a sweat because I was so uptight, because it was so foreign and so new and so different. And I didn't know how to do things. It made me feel inadequate because I didn't know how to do things. I had to go and ask people for help. I had numerous arguments with my son, who thought I was totally stupid. And it was quite agonising. I feel as if I'm sort of coming through that really difficult learning process now. But I imagine that a lot of people, particularly in my age group, are going through that same sort of thing, because it's different. And a lot of people much still prefer to learn through talking to people face to face. Like, if I did what you did and turned my phone off and didn't deal, I would lose the majority of my friends. Like, because that is my main way of communicating. Like, and I, whilst I can include in my lifestyle like, I spend most of my day in front of the computer, but the thought of coming home every night and spending another 3 hours in front of the computer not only drives me crazy, but would be the end of my marriage.
Reading, which talks about digital natives and digital immigrants.
Yep.
And the digital immigrants, we've only last time we fit into that category, and some of those signs they talked about looking at an email and then printing them out, and or printing out documents and editing them in a hard copy as opposed to on the screen. So, there's a lot of parallels in terms of what we're talking about, and we need to prepare better for things coming through and support the
Yeah, so I would agree the thing about is building up habits. But I wouldn't want that habit to take over my whole life, because I still value those other ways that I communicate with people, and they mean a lot to me.
I guess the other kind of thing is too, it depends what you do and how much control you actually have. But it would be pretty impossible for me at the moment to suddenly do all of the communication I need to do with the Institute via a blog or even via email, because I can't get everybody to open that. So even though I do my newsletters by email, I have to make sure they get printed out and put it under the noses of certain groups of staff, because otherwise they wouldn't even keep up to date with the stuff they really have to know about. Never mind the stuff that's discretionary. so that whole thing is that we've got a whole lot of transition issues, and we've got some people who have adopted and who use technology very well and who have groups of students who are keen to use it. We've got other groups of students who don't have it because of social disadvantage or funding. I mean, in our institute, there would be 30% of our students who have no home access to a computer and don't own that, and there would be a significant number who don't even have a mobile phone, Marty, because they can't afford it. They simply do not have that kind of access. That's a significant disadvantage. And even with students with disabilities, the ability for them to have access to appropriate technology is quite difficult, and we actually are funding that for some of them because it's better than print material. But that's an issue. And then we've got those kind of groups that are like you and I, Anne, that are probably halfway between. We can't spend a lot of time on the computer. We still like to print things out every now and again. And we're not really comfortable devoting all of our life to doing things online. And then we've got people who really don't want to know, and they'll just overlook it away as soon.
I can pick up everything Nancy said. And because I've just been interviewing all those students about the mobile phones, yes, they've got them. But the issue was, they use text messaging, so that's all they can afford. Mm-hmm. They can't afford to be ringing people. Mm-hmm. So that was a major thing. And the other thing about the digital natives and immigrants, I have a bit of a gripe about that because I think a lot of people...
Yeah, that's a great point. Mm-hmm. What about the immersion? That, you know, you talk about habitual, that something that's scary, when you start off with, you tend to shy away from it. If you just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it, in practice you become, it's like how you choose to travel. Like a lot of people have commented about you being so much and you're seeing different things. Now you could have come here, got off the plane, went to your 27 talks, got on the plane, and you said you've been to Australia, but fundamentally you've got a different experience. But you could have got on a bus and did a bus tour. You could have been an eco-tourist, you could have decided, oh, I'm going to live here for 3 months. And each of those experiences fundamentally, qualitatively different.
My things have done all of those.
Right.
including living here for 3 months.
Right, well, maybe you need to do the whole lot, but
yeah.
They are different experiences.
Sure.
And that's also related to choice, of how you choose to travel in these environments. Right?
I don't know how to respond to that exactly. I mean, my philosophy with regard to all of this has always been one of immersion in the sense of experiencing the total experience. So like, when I'm here in Australia, I have to go to Kathmandu, I have to go to the Rock, and so on and so forth, because it's about having the experience. It's also, you know, when I'm here, talking to the different people, seeing the different points of view, hearing people talk about their experiences, connecting with people from different places. For me, an important value always has been, and I assume will always continue, will be diversity of experience. Because it's in this diversity that I'm able to find out what is genuinely common and what is genuinely specific. If you have only a narrow set of experiences, your tendency to create generalizations that don't really apply is increased. You know, if I only went to talks and flew around, I would think Australia consisted entirely of airports, hotel rooms, and meeting rooms. and that would be Australia for me. I'd say, what a nice country, pretty bland. Which, you know, so totally unlike Australia. You know, back to the digital natives thing, one of the characteristics of what they're calling the digital native is that they, when they approach new technology, they get in, you know, they don't need training. They won't read it. Don't bother with the manual. They won't read it. They just go into the new technology and they start exploring. They're pressing buttons because they think life has a reset switch. Right. Nothing is permanently broken. But the thing is with this stuff, mostly, unless it's Windows, nothing is permanently broken. So,
I'm a little long in the tooth, but I consider myself to be in many ways a digital native just simply because of my background, and that's how I approach these things. It's like I've come to Australia and pressed all the buttons. I've tried all the different things, see what works, see what doesn't work. From the start of this session, right? You saw how this session started, right? Probe, right? See what works, see where we went. That's classic internet style. And then once there was a wave, caught the wave and went with it. So, I mean, talk about immersion, talk about habits, talk about approaches to things. To me, anyways, the best way to work with this technology is not so much to try to force it to do things, but rather to ride with the affordances that it gives you. If it gives you a lift somewhere, take it. It's like the trams in Melbourne, right? It can take you some part of the way, and then you have to walk or whatever. Bad analogy, but you know what I mean. Again, like the perception I had, just the vibe I had when I came in, is everybody was thinking, all right, content management system, XML, search, shared drive, and there was no way. Because my perception coming in is that would be the talk, but that wouldn't be the reality. But Google Groups or Yahoo Groups sometimes work, sometimes doesn't. Depends on the person. Some people live and die by their mobile phones, and that's good. If it's a communication form that's working for you, great. If you have a mobile phone, maybe SMS is something to explore if you don't have it already. I imagine lots of you do. I don't. But then again, I use ICQ. So I don't know. That's all kind of vague and fuzzy, but it's a vague and fuzzy issue. And, I think if this talk is about anything, it's about shifting expectations and shifting the idea that there will be some kind of technological solution to the problem of collaboration. And rather, collaboration between this group is going to depend on the will of the individuals in this group more than anything else, and just simply making it a lifestyle, making it a habit. If that's of value to you, if it carries you along the road. And, I don't know. How are we doing?
We've got 10 minutes.
Well,
about 8 minutes.
All right. So now for the rebuttal position.
And one of the things that I find interesting is that this group's made the assumption that it's a good thing to move in this direction, that collaboration necessarily takes into account a much greater use of technology. And there seems to be little discussion around the value or whether it's a good thing, rather than this. Well, I asked a bit of the conversation, but there was some values around whether or not you are being a digital native or a digital immigrant was good or bad, and we start to get like, well, if you don't know anything about it, well then, you're probably not as good as me, so there's that whole value thing at that end. But not around whether or not the actual progress that's been made in learning towards technology is something that we really want or, need.
Well, okay, let me talk about that. And
it's difficult.
Part of the whole digital native philosophy thing, if there is such a thing, and there is sort of such a thing, but different people have different values, and therefore any individual is going to get, it's the old internet slogan, your mileage may vary. For me, and I'll speak only for myself, for me, this technology, the possibilities of collaboration, I've quite literally made the difference between having even the possibility of a successful career and not having that possibility. For me, it was the difference. I lived in rural Canada. I didn't go really to academic conferences very often. I went to maybe a local regional one.
I didn't have access to publishing papers. I was never going to get a job as a university professor. It wasn't going to happen because I'm too stubborn and hard anyhow. My career probably without this technology would have been maybe a technologist at a regional college, maybe if I was lucky, but I was seriously looking at the food service industry. So what this has given me personally is the capacity to cut through a lot of the traditional barriers to communication. I've been able to express myself in such a way that it was possible for people to hear what I had to say. What I had to say would not be published in journals. What I had to say would not pass muster, if you will, because I'm not always diplomatic in the way I say it. I'm a little fast and loose with the references, and I don't have the patience for the Chicago Manual of Style, and so on and so forth. And so to me, this kind of communication has been everything. It's not necessarily going to be the case for other people, although if I can do one of the things that I am so famous for doing, draw the broad strokes of generalization, the more advantaged and well off you are, the less you need the technology. Because you already have the benefits that the technology will bring to people. The important thing to me has always been what the technology can do for the people who are facing barriers now. I've spent much of my time in Native communities, First Nations communities, and you look at what even the capacity to learn over the telephone has brought to these communities. The event is something like Athabasca University, which is offering open, very important, open, so you don't have to have your grade 12 or whatever to get in, and distance learning, what a difference it's made to the people in those communities. And even that's just the tiniest thing. I've gone to these communities and seen people's lives quite literally transformed just because of a little opportunity. And that's what's important. And so, to me, if things are going okay, if your job's doing all right, things are comfortable at work, there isn't that pressing need to do more in new communications. It's when your voice isn't being heard that you need these tools.
I guess I'm being a bit of devil's advocate.
Yeah, that's absolutely okay.
I guess that I'd have to draw a similarity from a situation we have here in Australia with a mob called, is it Jay of Hardy? Mm. The Hardy Group? Mm. Now, Hardy, I'm sure, would stand up and say that building homes using asbestos was fantastic for him. Right? He made a lot of money, he was able to do a lot of things, and it opened up the world for him. But, 30, 40, how many years down the track, we found out that there was a real cost for James Hardy and what he did with his homes. More people could afford asbestos homes because they were cheap, right? So, when you draw an analogy like that, I guess what I'm really saying is how far ahead are we looking and have we identified any of the risks of, plunging headlong into something? And I'm not saying that, using ICT is the same as building homes with asbestos, but do we know and is it being considered? So that's really important.
I think the other thing is we just reflect that actually what we're doing here, like in this room, we're all here face to face having this really distilled critical conversation, and I think we shouldn't underestimate that that needs to be part of our communication strategy. This technology, I don't think, if you try and take this conversation and put it into a technological framework and envisage how it might happen, far more drawn out, complex, maybe not as interesting or as engaging. There's still a real place for me looking at Janet and whispering to her, I think that's crap. This sort of thing.
You can say that on YouTube.
You can, but it's a different. Yes.
More control.
I think that's what I'm saying. I think we mustn't forget the value of getting together and having a chat over a cup of tea. Yeah? I mean, I'm a great technophile. People in this room know that. I love technology, I love playing, I love doing things, but I also love sitting and talking to people.
And another example of it, to reinforce that, for instance, is when we moved into the interoperability area, we attempted to get people to talk about these issues online and using the technology, and not a squeak. We got people to sit down around a table, and the whole thing just opened up straight away and went from that point.
So that's actually a really interesting point, because one of the things that I've been involved in for many years was distance education. And we were early adopters of things like voice communicated. Remember that?
Yes.
Like teleconferencing online and stuff like that. And you could get two people for the same topic and get two completely different outcomes on a session like that. And the importance of the skills that I don't think we focus a lot on in our training, primary training and our professional development, is the skills to manage those kinds of interactions in a variety of media and contexts. And one of the things that's really interesting for me is watching who made the transition from teaching, face-to-face and distance teaching, into online. They're always the people that had those skills and also had always were prepared to try new ways of doing things, whether they were tape recorders or video. They had no problems making the shift. So it wasn't the technology that was a barrier, it was something else that got in the way of those.
But some of what gets in the way is that we think what happens in a classroom, traditional classroom, is good teaching, and then we measure everything online in reference to that. Let's go back to the core question we could ask here about good communication. Separate to collaboration, which brings in another whole lot of issues about, why don't I go there at the moment? Okay, so if you had a really dynamic face-to-face classroom teacher, that teacher could use lots of methods and techniques, not chalk and talk and overhead projector. This is what you normally see in TAFE. It's going to be really serious. We see a lot of teacher talk time and overhead projectors. We don't see dynamic group work, a whole lot of different situations set up to be explored in and out of the classroom. And that kind of, getting back to the mindset thing, Marie brought at the beginning, it's the ability of a person to be a whole, complete, dynamic person in their thinking and to continually ask questions that open up barriers in their head. And that's the person that's going to use this or this or this, whether it be a technology or another face-to-face technique or methodology, that's going to open up new learning experiences. Because they'll see it as a learning experience, not a transfer of information. And so we're talking about communication at the moment. Then we go to collaboration. That's another whole social engineering thing, because that's about a whole lot of self-knowledge about ego, ability to share, not holding on, ability to speak well and clearly to people, to negotiate, to clarify, to let go of your own of things you hold dearly sometimes go and see the other. This is a whole new ball game that we haven't talked about. We've talked about technology. That's just the medium through which we do what we have the skills to do.
Yeah, and it's also that whole thing back to tacit knowledge, all that unspoken stuff with collaboration.
And that's right. Because that's why lots of people think they've got technology and they're doing interactive classrooms when they take their text and put it online and they use that. I've got technology because they use PowerPoint now. I don't do talk and talk anymore.
So they just do bad talk is based online.
Absolutely right. The good classroom teacher will be a good online teacher or a good video conference lecturer, whatever, because they understand what interactivity about what real teaching is.
That's going to be learned in the end.
So that's a good example where they are trying to solve a problem or achieve an outcome and they are bloody-minded about what they will use to achieve it. But they're very clear about where they're going and why they're using this. And I think that's the same as where we started with this, is the importance of having that clarity about what it is we're trying to achieve so that we can always test
any pull or any option against whether it will help us do that, because otherwise we're just going to waste our time.
Well, it's about 4 o'clock.
It is.
And I would like to pursue this, but I have to go back and do a newsletter. You'll make this available to all of us.
Yes,
diagram. Great. And the sooner you do it, the sooner I can link to it my newsletter. Excellent. Then just send me a note. I'll carry it in the newsletter. I want to thank you all for teaching me this afternoon. I really appreciate people spending the money to have me come out here and learn from all of you. It's interesting, isn't it? One of the things that I sort of wonder, because I do sessions like this from time to time, although not as much as you might think, because a lot of people want the PowerPoint and the talk, right? Because I come in and I do a conversation like that, and then at the end I get complaints because they didn't learn from me. And it's sort of ironic because it's the model that, you know, the facilitation of the communication. So I always have mixed feelings when I do a session like this one. So I hope I gave you some value. If not so much in terms of content, then I hope you found it to be a well-managed process of pointing to people.
Bit of a laugh.
I do hope you got something from that. And if not, if you do want the information and just present it, I've got this tape. There's a little glitch in the recording in the middle, but and about 20 hours of other just PowerPoint and text talks that you can listen to. So, I mean, there's absolutely a lot of content available for you. Thank you so much for sharing and letting me know what your issues are and your views are, because I've certainly been able to gain an awful lot from that. So I think that's basically it.
Mm-hmm. Except to say thank you to you, Stephen. I think it's really been interesting for people, because I think some people thought we were going to have the PowerPoint and the talk. But what's been really interesting is to actually say, if you're going to talk about collaborative systems, then you might as well have a collaborative conversation. And what we really have wanted to say is that what we need to do in taking forward lots of e-learning in South Australia is not concentrate on the content or the technology or what platform we've got on, but look at how do we actually get people here having collaborative conversations far more often, so that we actually build that together. So thank you very much for leading us through. We will certainly look forward to reading more of Stephen's weekly or daily newsletter, depending on how much time you've got, and we'd like you to accept this, which we hope you will enjoy, as a memento of South Australia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I'll drink it as soon as I can.
Maybe it'll help the newsletter go well. Gary, you should have said thank you to